In 2026, you can now hold more raw computing power in the palm of your hand than existed in the absolute most expensive massive desktop towers just like 5 years ago.
Oh, easily. It's what?
Think about that for a second. We have officially reached a point where firing up a graphically intense AAA game no longer requires you to lug around a 3-kilogram cinder block of a laptop.
Right, with the power brick that's also the size of a cinder block.
Exactly. The era of stationary heavy gaming hardware is actively collapsing right in front of us. Mm. We are standing right in the middle of a massive hardware paradigm shift.
We really are. The engineering leaps we're seeing right now are, I mean, they're nothing short of a revolution.
Yeah, and today we are going to open up the chassis on the two devices that made the impossible a reality.
So today we're looking at a really incredibly detailed autopsy-style breakdown from Tech and Garage.
Right.
The source is titled Pocket Monsters, Asus ROG Ally-2 versus Steam Deck OLED, and it meticulously pulls apart how Taiwanese giant Asus and American software behemoth Valve tackled the exact same engineering problem.
But using fundamentally opposing philosophies.
Completely opposite. It's fascinating.
So our mission on this deep dive is to completely bypass the marketing hype. We are going to strip away all the buzzwords, look straight under the hood, and help you understand exactly what is happening inside these two machines that are, you know, currently battling for control of your pocket.
And it is a battle.
Okay, let's unpack this.
Yeah.
Because the laws of computational physics have literally been rewritten here, and I really want to know how the engineers actually pulled it off.
Well, to truly grasp what's happening, we have to start at the microscopic level.
Okay.
The bedrock of this entire handheld revolution is the evolution of TSMC's lithography.
Right, the chip makers.
Exactly. Specifically, we're talking about their 3-nanometer and 4-nanometer manufacturing processes.
So whenever I hear nanometer in tech specs, I just automatically assume smaller means newer, right?
Pretty much, yeah.
But what does a 3-nanometer process actually physically change inside the machine?
Okay, think of a computer processor like a sprawling, incredibly complex factory floor.
Okay, I'm picturing it.
Millions of workers, which in this case are electrons, are constantly running back and forth to deliver information.
Right.
Now, older architecture, like an old 10-nanometer chip, means that factory is spread out over a massive geographic area.
So the workers have to run further.
Exactly. The electrons physically travel further distances. That travel time creates latency, and worse, the friction of that movement generates immense heat.
Oh, heat is the enemy.
Always. So what TSMC did with 3- and 4-nanometer lithography is essentially demolish that sprawling factory and rebuild it as a hyper-dense, vertically integrated skyscraper.
Wow.
The transistors are packed so incredibly close together that the electrons barely have to move at all.
So you get what? Less heat and more speed?
You get a massive explosion in processing speed while simultaneously slashing the amount of power required and heat generated.
So by shrinking the physical distance the data travels, engineers suddenly found themselves able to cram the processing power of a home console into a piece of silicon the size of a postage stamp.
That's exactly it. And that leads us directly to the brain Asus chose for the ROG Ally-2.
Which the source calls a nuclear reactor, right?
Yes, the Ryzen Z2 Extreme. They partnered with AMD to build it on that hyper-dense 4-nanometer process. What's fascinating here is how they stacked the specs.
Break it down for me.
The CPU uses AMD's cutting-edge Zen 5 architecture, boasting 8 physical cores and 16 processing threads.
That is basically a high-end desktop processor.
It is, and they paired that with a graphics processor built on RDNA 4 architecture featuring 16 compute units.
Okay, so that's it.
We are talking about raw graphical power measured in teraflops, which is trillions of floating-point operations per second.
Right.
It allows this handheld to natively render heavy, complex titles at 1440p resolution.
That is insane for a handheld. Now, the Tech and Garage breakdown also made a huge deal about the RAM in the Asus.
Oh, the LPDDR5X.
Yeah, they packed it with 8533 megahertz RAM. Why is the speed of the RAM so critical when you already have such a powerful processor?
Because a lightning-fast processor is useless if it's constantly waiting for data to arrive.
Oh, like a bottleneck.
Precisely. If your processor is that vertically integrated skyscraper churning out products, the RAM is the highway leading up to the loading dock.
Right. Okay.
If you have a slow highway, you get a traffic jam, and the factory has to just stop and wait. That 8533 megahertz speed guarantees an absolutely open, massive highway.
So it never starves for data.
Never. meaning it can handle incredibly heavy AI calculations like, say, the dense living NPC systems in a game like GTA VI without dropping a single frame.
Wow. So if I'm understanding this, Asus essentially decided to build a raw, gas-guzzling V8 muscle car.
That is a great way to put it.
It's all about brute force, massive specs, and leaving everything else in the dust.
That is the perfect way to visualize their engineering philosophy. But now let's look across the aisle at Valve.
The slawless simulator, as the source calls it.
Exactly. Valve took a completely different approach with the Steam Deck OLED. They're using a custom chip codenamed Sephiroth, which is an APU.
Now, I see the term APU thrown around a lot. How is that actually different from a standard CPU and GPU?
Well, in a traditional desktop PC, your central processor and your graphics card are two completely separate physical components on the motherboard.
Right, you slot the graphics card in.
Yeah, and they have to talk to each other across a bridge. An APU, or accelerated processing unit, fuses both the CPU and the GPU onto one single die.
Oh, so they're literally physically touching.
Yes, they share the same pool of memory and communicate instantly. But here's the fascinating part about Valve's Sephiroth APU. It is built on an older 6-nanometer lithography.
Wait, really?
Yeah. It uses older Zen 2 architecture for the CPU and RDNA 2 for the GPU, with only 4 cores and 8 compute units.
Wait, I have to stop you there because I am genuinely confused by
I
this.
know, it sounds counterintuitive.
I'm looking at the spec sheet. If Valve's chip has half the cores, older architecture, and is built on a less efficient 6-nanometer process compared to Asus's cutting-edge 4-nanometer chip, isn't the Steam Deck just instantly obsolete? Like, why would they put older tech in a brand new device?
I mean, if you are only looking at paper specs, it absolutely looks like a mismatch.
It looks like a slaughter.
Right, but in hardware engineering, paper specs are rarely the whole story. Valve has zero intention of competing in the raw graphical power race.
Okay, so what is their strategy?
Their entire strategy focuses on the concept of thermal design power, or TDP.
Which is heat, basically.
Right, it's the maximum amount of heat a system is allowed to generate, which directly correlates to how much battery wattage it draws.
Okay.
The Asus chip pulls up to 30 watts of power when it is running at full tilt.
Which drains the battery fast.
Very fast. Valve, on the other hand, designed their Sephiroth processor to operate within an incredibly strict, unyielding limit of just 15 watts, and often it runs at just 5 watts.
Oh, wow. Okay, my analogy is shifting. If Asus is the V8 muscle car, Valve is building a highly specialized aerodynamic Formula One car.
Yes.
It's not about being the biggest or having the most horsepower. It's about extreme calculated efficiency on the track.
You nailed it. Valve painstakingly calibrated that older silicon to deliver perfectly linear, stable performance within that low power ceiling.
So they aren't even trying to hit 1440p.
Not at all. Rather than chasing 1440p resolutions, they designed the entire system around locking the frame rate at a much lower 800p resolution.
Which saves a ton of power.
A massive amount. That drastic reduction in power draw is a calculated sacrifice to guarantee system stability.
Okay, but all that computational math and calculated efficiency means absolutely nothing if the physical screen you're staring at can't properly translate those frames to your eyeballs, right?
Exactly. The display is everything.
So let me ask you a very practical question, putting myself in the shoes of someone trying to choose between these two devices. Is pushing a 1440p resolution on a tiny 7-inch screen actually a noticeable upgrade that I'm going to appreciate? Or is it just a gimmick to look good on the box?
It's a brilliant question, and the answer lies entirely in the specific display technology Asus chose.
Okay, well, lay on me.
So the ROG Ally 2 features a 7-inch IPS panel hitting that 1440p mark with a 120 Hz refresh rate. But the absolute magic of this display, the specific mechanism that justifies its existence, is its hardware-level support for variable refresh rate, or VRR.
Okay, VRR. Break down how VRR actually feels to the person holding the device.
Yeah.
What is the mechanism behind it?
Think about playing a demanding, chaotic game. Explosions are going off, weather effects are changing.
Right, lots of stuff happening on screen.
Your handheld is working incredibly hard, and your frame rate is not going to stay at a perfect flat 60 frames per second.
Because the processor is getting hammered.
Exactly. The GPU might push out 55 frames 1 second, then drop to 42 the next, then jump back to 60. You know, on a standard monitor with a fixed refresh rate of 60 hertz, the screen is demanding a new image 60 times a second, regardless of what the GPU is doing.
So what happens when the GPU drops to 42?
When the GPU can't deliver the frame in time, the monitor gets confused and displays half of the old frame and half of the new frame simultaneously.
Ugh, That's screen tearing.
Yes.
Where the image literally looks sliced horizontally for a millisecond and you feel that perceptible, jarring stutter.
Precisely. It shatters the illusion of the game. It feels terrible. But variable refresh rate is a communication protocol between the monitor and the GPU.
So they talk to each other.
Right. The monitor essentially surrenders its fixed rate and says, I will only refresh exactly when you hand me a new frame.
Oh, wow.
So if the GPU suddenly drops to outputting 47 frames per second, the screen instantly changes its physical refresh rate to 47 hertz.
And the result is?
Zero screen tearing. Games feel impossibly smooth, even when the underlying processor is actually struggling to keep up.
That sounds like a massive advantage for Asus. But then Valve takes a completely different road.
They do.
They put in a slightly larger 7.4-inch screen, but they stick to that 800p resolution and a 90 hertz refresh rate. Again, on paper, you'd think Asus wins effortlessly.
That paper, yeah.
But the Ticking Garage autopsy highlights that Valve is using an OLED panel.
And we cannot overstate the visual miracle of organic light-emitting diodes.
Okay, tell me why.
First, to address the resolution on a screen that small 800p pixel density is incredibly dense, your eyes physically cannot resolve the individual pixels at a normal viewing distance, so you really don't miss the 1440p sharpness.
That makes sense.
But the true power is the OLED mechanism itself. The IPS panel in the Asus uses a large universal backlight that sits behind the pixels.
Right, constantly shining light.
Constantly shining white light through them to create an image. Even when a pixel is supposed to be black, that backlight is still shining, which is why blacks and IPS screens always look a bit dark gray or washed out.
But an OLED panel has no universal backlight, right? Every single pixel is its own independent light source.
Yes. Every pixel is made of organic compounds that illuminate when an electric current is applied.
Okay.
Which means when a pixel needs to display black, the system doesn't just block a backlight, it physically cuts the power to that specific pixel.
It turns off.
It emits absolute zero light that gives you infinite contrast. When you are playing an atmospheric, shadow-heavy title, the source specifically mentions the Dead Space remake or Cyberpunk 2077, the depth of the true black sitting right next to a neon sign hitting 1,000 nits of peak HDR brightness.
Just pops.
It will completely mesmerize you.
But the inspector's note in the source mentions a pretty glaring weakness for the Steam Deck display. It lacks VRR support.
It does. That's the trade-off.
Why leave it out?
Because OLED panels are notoriously difficult to sync with variable refresh rate without causing visual artifacts like gamma flickering, so Val opted to just leave it out.
So when your frame rates inevitably drop in heavy games on the Steam Deck, you're going to notice that visual stuttering much more than you would on the seamlessly synced Asus screen.
You absolutely will.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though. The physical shell housing those screens.
Oh, the ergonomics.
Yeah, the source points out a fascinating cybernetic design note. Even though the Steam Deck is physically larger, the reviewers found it actually has superior ergonomics.
It's surprisingly comfortable.
Right. It features these deep, incredibly comfortable palm grips, and it includes dual haptic trackpads.
Those trackpads are game changers.
Totally. They let you effortlessly play mouse-heavy strategy games like Civilization 6-6, which is a massive paradigm shift for a handheld.
It opens up a whole new genre of games.
Meanwhile, the Asus ROG Ally 2 went a completely different route. It's lighter, more compact, and leans heavily into this aggressive, futuristic aesthetic with customizable AuraSync RGB light rings around the joysticks.
The physical shells really broadcast who each company believes their core audience is.
Right, the gamer aesthetic versus the practical console.
Exactly. But, you know, those beautiful screens and ergonomic grips are really just inert glass and plastic without an operating system telling them what to do.
Oh, here we go. The software.
And the differing hardware limits we just explored directly dictated the radical software paths each company had to take.
This is the OS war. The absolute freedom of an open platform versus isolated console optimization.
Yep.
If I go back to my analogies, using the Asus with its native Windows 11 installation feels like living in a massive, chaotic, but completely boundless metropolis.
I like that.
You can do anything, go anywhere. But using Valve's custom Steam OS is like staying at an ultra-luxurious, five-star, all-inclusive resort. Everything is pristine and perfectly catered to you, but you are absolutely not allowed to leave the front gates.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it's the classic tech industry dilemma of open ecosystems versus closed ecosystems.
So let's explore the Asus Windows 11 metropolis first.
Okay, because it's running a native, unadulterated version of Microsoft's OS, the advantage is the total obliteration of software boundaries.
You can install whatever you want.
Exactly. You aren't locked into a single storefront. You want to run Steam. Fine. Epic Games, GOG, Ubisoft Connect, no problem. Most importantly, you get native access to Xbox Game Pass.
Which is a massive non-negotiable selling point for a huge portion of gamers.
It's massive. And because it's Windows, it natively supports multiplayer games that utilize aggressive kernel-level anti-cheat systems.
Right, titles like Call of Duty, Valorant, or Destiny 2.
Exactly.
Now, I hear kernel level a lot when people complain about anti-cheat software. Why is it such a big deal for these handhelds?
So the kernel is the absolute core of an operating system. It has ring zero security access, meaning it has total unrestricted control over the entire system's hardware and memory.
It sees everything.
Everything. Modern multiplayer games use kernel-level anti-cheat drivers to sit at that foundational layer and monitor everything the computer is doing, ensuring no third-party hacking software is injecting code into the game.
Okay, and since Asus runs native Windows.
Those invasive anti-cheat programs install and run flawlessly.
Got it.
Furthermore, beyond gaming, the ROG Ally 2 is literally a full desktop PC. You can plug it into a monitor, pair a Bluetooth mouse, install Adobe Premiere Pro, run Telegram, and use it as a legitimate workstation.
But there is a hefty toll for living in that chaotic metropolis, isn't there? The user interface sounds like a nightmare.
Oh, it is a very frustrating one.
Yeah.
Microsoft simply has not optimized the foundational architecture of Windows, specifically the resource scheduler for a 7-inch battery-reliant device operated by joysticks.
It's meant for a mouse and keyboard.
Right. So you are constantly fighting the UI. You deal with invisible background processes suddenly draining your power, unprompted Windows Defender updates interrupting your game,
Oh, that's the worst.
and notorious sleep-wake bugs, where the operating system gets confused and refuses to turn the screen on or off properly.
Wow.
Asus tries to pave over these potholes with their custom Arm Recreate SE software overlay, but beneath that thin veneer, you are still wrestling with a stubborn desktop PC.
Which brings us to Valve's luxurious walled resort.
The SteamOS.
They looked at that Windows catastrophe and decided to build their own ecosystem from scratch. They created SteamOS 3.0, which is actually based on Arch Linux.
Right.
But the vast majority of PC games are programmed specifically for Windows. How on earth do you run a Windows game on a Linux operating system?
That is the technological magic of Valve's Proton translation layer.
Proton. Okay, how does that work?
Proton is a compatibility tool that acts as a real-time interpreter.
Real time.
Yes. When a game sends a Windows-specific command, like a DirectX graphical call, Proton intercepts that command, instantly translates it into a Vulkan graphical call that Linux understands, and feeds it to the hardware.
And this doesn't lag the game.
All of this happens in milliseconds, completely invisibly to the user. The result is a fluid, console-like experience with zero Windows bloatware running in the background.
That is incredible.
And because Valve tightly controls both the hardware and the software, they can engineer features Windows simply can't handle.
Like the suspend resume feature.
Exactly. Just like a Nintendo Switch, you press the power button, and SteamOS instantly saves the game state to the RAM and cuts power to everything else.
And it wakes up just as fast.
You can throw it in your bag, take it out 3 days later, press the button, and you're back on the exact same frame in a fraction of a second.
Trying to force a sleep state like that on a demanding game in Windows usually results in a fatal crash.
Oh, almost every time.
Now, the source also mentions Valve solves something called shader compilation stutter. How does that work?
So, in modern PC gaming, a major cause of stuttering occurs when your computer encounters a new visual asset, like a big explosion or a complex shower, and has to compile the mathematical geometry for that shader on the fly.
While you're playing.
Yes. Because PC hardware varies so wildly, games can't pre-package those compiled shaders.
But Valve.
Valve knows exactly what CPU and GPU is inside every single Steam Deck, so they use their massive server farms to compile all those complex shaders ahead of time.
Oh, that's so smart.
When you download a game on SteamOS, it downloads the pre-compiled shaders directly to your device.
So when the explosion happens on screen.
The processor doesn't have to do any math, it just pulls the finished file from the SSD. It
Yeah.
virtually eliminates stuttering.
Okay, but the drawback, the high walls of the resort, is that playing anything outside the Steam storefront requires complex frustrating Linux workarounds.
Yeah, it's not user-friendly if you leave Steam.
And those multiplayer games with kernel-level anti-cheats we talked about,
yeah.
Linux's security architecture naturally rejects that kind of deep root-level intrusion.
Which means they won't run.
Right. Games like Call of Duty or Valorant just straight up block Linux, meaning they will not launch on the Steam Deck at all.
You are trading total freedom for flawless stability.
Yeah.
But running a desktop OS at 1440p, or dynamically translating Windows code on the fly, triggers the ultimate boss fight for handheld gaming thermodynamics.
And this part of the autopsy actually shocked me.
The battery.
Yeah. I was looking at the battery specs, and Asus managed to cram a massive 80-watt-hour battery into the Ally 2. That is a huge power cell for a handheld.
It really is.
But the endurance benchmarks show that if you put it in turbo mode to play Cyberpunk 2077, it still dies in about an hour and a half.
Yep.
How is that physically possible? Where is all that power going?
This raises an important question about power efficiency versus raw horsepower. Remember that Z2 Extreme chip is an energy-thirsty beast.
Right, the V8 engine.
Exactly. To generate that PS5-level graphical fidelity, it is pulling a constant 30 watts of power from the battery. When you draw that much current, an 80-watt-hour cell simply drains fast.
That makes sense.
Furthermore, pulling 30 watts in a plastic shell generates a terrifying amount of thermal energy. To solve this, Asus engineers had to invent what they call a zero-gravity dual-fan cooling system utilizing anti-gravity heat pipes.
Anti-gravity heat pipes? That sounds like science fiction. What is the actual physics behind that?
Okay, so traditional heat pipes are sealed copper tubes containing a small amount of liquid. The liquid absorbs heat from the processor, turns into vapor, travels to the fan to cool down, condenses back into liquid, and relies on gravity to flow back to the processor.
Okay, but a handheld device is constantly being tilted and flipped around.
Exactly. If gravity pulls the liquid away from the processor, the device overheats and melts.
Oh, wow. So how did Asus fix it?
Asus engineered specialized internal chambers lined with a microscopic copper wicking structure.
Wicking, like a candle.
Sort of, yeah. This wick uses capillary action, the same physics that allows plants to draw water up from their roots against gravity to physically pull the condensed coolant back to the processor, no matter how you're holding the device.
That is wild.
It keeps the surface temperatures remarkably cool, so your hands never burn. And it operates at a whisper-quiet 26 decibels.
It's an incredible feat of engineering. They solved the heat and the noise, but at the end of the day, you are still tethered to a wall outlet after 90 minutes of heavy gaming.
That's the reality of 30 watts.
Now contrast that with Valve's approach. They only put a 50-watt-hour battery in the Steam Deck OLED. It's a significantly smaller power source.
Much smaller.
But the autopsy calls it a marathon runner.
It all comes back to that strict 15-watt ceiling on the Sephiroth processor.
Right.
It simply cannot drain the battery as fast as the Asus can.
Right.
Add to that the OLED panel, remember? Dark pixels are physically cut off from the power supply, meaning they draw zero electricity.
Oh, right.
If you are playing a dark, atmospheric game, the screen itself is actively saving you massive amounts of battery life second by second.
Plus the deep integration of the SteamOS smart settings.
Exactly. Because Valve controls the OS, you can press a quick menu button and instantly cap your screen's physical refresh rate down to 40 hertz and limit the processor's power draw to just 5 watts.
And the battery just scales with it.
Right. If you are playing a visually simple 2D indie game, you can stretch that smaller 50-watt-hour battery to an unbelievable 8 to 10 hours of continuous playtime.
Wow.
The Steam Deck proves that in the handheld space, software optimization and thermal efficiency are vastly more important than raw processing horsepower.
Which brings us to the ultimate synthesis of the Tech and Garage autopsy. There is no absolute objective winner in this handheld PC war.
Not at all.
It completely depends on your genetic profile as a tech consumer.
Without a doubt. If you identify as a power user, if you are the kind of person who loves diving into BIOS menus, tweaking granular graphical settings, and you demand crisp 1440p resolution.
The tinkerer, basically.
Exactly. If you absolutely require native access to Xbox Game Pass, and you play online competitive shooters that mandate kernel-level anti-cheat software.
And if you don't mind carrying around a heavy 100-watt power bank and occasionally wrestling with Windows 11 UI bugs.
Right. Then the Asus ROG Ally 2 is your machine. It is quite literally the most powerful powerful pocket computer in the world.
But if you want a seamless console experience, if your perfect evening is collapsing on the couch after an exhausting day, pressing a single physical button to instantly resume your game right where you left off.
The resort experience.
Exactly. If you want to get lost in the infinite contrast of a mesmerizing OLED screen with unmatched battery life, running on an operating system that requires zero tweaking, the Steam Deck OLED is the undisputed king of comfort and stability.
It is the ultimate choice between boundless potential and perfected execution.
So what does this all mean? As you're listening to this, I want you to think about what kind of tech consumer you really are. Do you have the raw power of the V8 engine or the calculated aerodynamics of the F1 car?
It's a tough choice.
It is. But I also want to leave you with a provocative thought that goes far beyond just these two specific devices. We just spent 20 minutes dissecting how engineers have successfully compressed the computational power of a high-end desktop PC into a 7-inch plastic shell in 2026.
Right.
If we have achieved this level of miniaturization, what is the ultimate fate of the traditional living room console? Or that giant desktop tower sitting under your desk gathering dust?
That's a great point.
Are we rapidly approaching a future where all heavy stationary hardware is obsolete? Where you just carry a single pocket monster with you in your jacket and simply dock it into whatever screen or VR headset you happen to be standing near?
I mean, the paradigm shift is only accelerating. The laws of computational physics have been rewritten, and we are really just seeing the first chapter.
I couldn't agree more. The era of lugging around that heavy 3-kilogram cinder block and its massive power brick is officially over. The future of immense, uncompromised power now fits right in the palm of your hand. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. We'll catch you on the next one.